Welcome to MetaStrategy's Forum on World-Class IT. I'm Peter High, and I'm pleased to welcome Susan Cram to the broadcast. Susan is an executive coach and president of Value Dance, an executive coaching and leadership development firm. Over the past 14 years, Susan's coached executives from a number of Fortune 500 companies, including Toyota, Sony, and Whole Foods Markets. She's a frequent speaker, a blogger for the Harvard Business Review, and author of the Harvard Business Press book, 8 Things We Hate About IT, How to Move Beyond the Frustrations to Form a New Partnership with IT. Susan's the former CFO and executive vice president at Chevy's Mexican Restaurants, where she led finance, business strategy, restaurant development, franchising, legal, and information technology functions. Prior to Chevy's, Susan worked with the Taco Bell Corporation and held the positions of CIO and Vice President of the Information Technology Group and Senior Director of Financial and Strategic Planning. Susan received her master's degree in management from Northwestern University, specializing in finance, marketing, and quantitative methods, and her BA from the University of California at San Diego, summa cum laude, specializing in management and computer science. I recently caught up with Susan in her office in Southern California, and our conversation covered World-Class IT Principle 1, People, as Susan spoke about the skills that will be necessary for the IT department of the future, Principle 4, IT and Business Partnerships, as we discussed many of the concepts introduced in her book, and the CIO's relationship with the rest of the C-suite of executives more generally, as well as a variety of other topics.
Well, Susan Cram, welcome to the Forum on World-Class IT.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here, Peter. Thank you so much for inviting me.
It's our pleasure. Well, Susan, I was so intrigued in preparing for this interview because you've been a CFO, you've been a CIO, you're now an advisor to IT executives, among other corporate leaders. So therefore, you've been an IT executive, a client of IT executives, an advisor to IT executives. What have these various perspectives taught you about the role and its potential?
Three things. The first thing is the CIO job is really hard. The second thing is it's under transition, and it's under transition for good reason. And the third thing is that the future is really, really bright.
Great. Can I kind of dial into those a little bit further?
Absolutely. In terms of it being hard, as you know, I went from being a CIO to a CFO. And as a CFO, I was with a medium-sized company. So in that regard, you could say, oh, gee, the job's a little bit easier, but it was very, very broad, as it is in a lot of medium-sized companies. So I had franchising and legal and real estate and construction and strategy and finance and IT. So I had a large remit, if you will. And what I found was the job was easier every day of the week, every minute of the day than the CIO job that I had. And it was easier because I didn't have to manage the financial asset on behalf of the company. We had trained from supervisors, actually restaurant managers, because I was in the restaurant business, on up, to manage the financial asset as part of their core responsibilities. So nobody came to me and said, why isn't my profit good? Right? It was very much of a partnership in terms of what they needed to do with the asset and what I could do in terms of coaching and expertise to help them. The analogy to IT is that we still have a dynamic, and that's why the second point about the job is transitioning, the role of IT is transitioning. We still have a dynamic where my IT is broken, if you will, and why isn't IT fixing it? And you have that in spite of the fact that IT is running under or fueling all of our business processes. So you've got a high level of dependence on IT. You've got an extraordinary increase in demand for IT, both because of our competitive landscape plus the technology options that are exploding. And yet we still have a very constrained supply for IT in terms of our ability to fulfill the needs, and a very, excuse the expression, IT dumb organization overall. I did research as part of preparing for my book a couple years ago where 75% of business leaders said, yep, I'm IT dumb. Over 80% said, I make half-baked requests from IT and I'm clueless about enterprise impact. And so you compare this what I felt was a pretty easy CFO job because, you know, we had a high level of competence in terms of managing the IT asset, and we had a really constructive, mutually accountable partnership. And you compare that to what exists within IT today, and you can see that we have an opportunity to mature the way that we manage IT. And to me, that's extremely exciting, both the opportunity that we now have increased competence, we are much more disciplined about how we manage the IT asset, given the heavy lifting that we've all been doing in and out of IT in terms of governance and discipline processes and that kind of stuff. And then you overlay the kind of technology options, be it cloud or mobility, et cetera. I'm more excited to be in IT today than I've been in the 35 years I've been involved with IT.
Well, it's a really interesting comparison, Susan. To put it slightly differently, the CFO has the advantage because he or she is speaking the language of business, which in many cases really is finance. So much of what that role stands for is literally the wherewithal of the organization, whereas so much about IT is foreign to the rest of the organization, be it the language, the esoteric aspects of what is managed as part of infrastructure and architecture and so on. How do you advise those CIOs that you work with to increase the curiosity and knowledge about what IT is doing, about what it can do to a population of colleagues outside of IT who may not really desire to know an awful lot more?
The good news is that we have a demographic of user community and a demographic, a broad demographic of user partners, executive partners. So the good news is we don't have like one IT dumb executive team. We have spots of brilliance in there. And I think anything that we need to do going forward is to really leverage the spots of brilliance and use those as case studies in terms of what we can do in revising the partnership and the mutual accountability and the way we work together. In fact, I was facilitating an all-day meeting with an executive staff of a business this week, and the CIO is to be commended because she brought me in. I'm not recommending myself necessarily as the solution, but she has taken a lot of professional risk to educate her executive team and expose them to the best thinking in Silicon Valley and to really challenge them with thinking about IT in a much more serious, informed manner. And there were a couple things that came out of the meeting. One is that one of the executives was talking about how frustrating SAP is and, you know, how arcane it is to use and et cetera, et cetera. And he said, you know what? Because what's frustrating to me is I wanted to learn how to run this exception report. So I got on Google and I typed in, how do I run this exception report? And he said, there were like a million hits plus a YouTube video on how to run the exception report. So I was able to figure this out, and I needed a training class. And he goes, the question is, how do we get our organization to have that same mindset? To which I said to him, I said, well, when are we going to put IT in job descriptions? When are we going to start assessing people's IT capability side by side with their financial acumen, side by side with their leadership or HR capabilities when we hire people?
And you're saying outside of the IT department, if I'm understanding you correctly.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And so that was the first thing was, you know, it would have been inappropriate to actually like hug and kiss him, but I wanted to because I'm thinking, you know what? You know, he's saying, this is my job. I need to know how to master this tool. This isn't beyond me, right? And it's my responsibility. You know, it's really easy to sort of externalize and say it's somebody else's problem. The second thing that happened was there was a speaker from the CIO Executive Council, and one of the quotes they use is, technology is too important to leave it to IT. I just think that's brilliant. And no CIO in the world should feel defensive about that or feel that is a slight. It is an enterprise asset. It needs to be managed as an enterprise asset.
Very interesting points. Very interesting points indeed. Before leaving the kind of balance between the CFO and the CIO, I wanted to, since of course those are both roles you've played, you've even had IT departments report up to you outside of IT in your role as CFO. I'm curious about your opinion about where IT should optimally report, whether the CEO, the CFO, the COO. Do you have a perspective on that?
The overall answer to that is every organization has the IT capability they deserve. So as a CEO level, and hopefully there are CEOs, senior executives listening to this podcast, if you don't like your IT capability, look and say, what have I done or how have I contributed to that issue? Meaning, have I just let somebody else hire this CIO person? What are my aspirations? And how much time have I invested in that? And what have I done across my entire senior staff in order to really challenge them to leverage technology to grow the business in different ways? And so the first thing I would do is look inside. Now, part of what you see when you see CEOs that are not very clued in is that they see IT as being a relatively backroom kind of a function. And then, you know what, I don't care where it reports, because they shouldn't either. But you have to be very careful that if they're unhappy about their IT capability, they better make sure that they are meeting their side of the deal, meaning that they've been feeding and watering this IT plant, if you will. For CIOs who find themselves reporting to CFOs, if the lights aren't on at the senior part of your organization, guess what? You took the job. You know, either be happy doing what they hired you to do or go find another job. I worked for Taco Bell, and I was a CIO there, and, you know, I had a wonderful sponsor there, and he said, you know, we want you to be the CIO of another one of the divisions. And I said to him, I said, well, if I'm going to be in technology, I'm not going to work for PepsiCo. There's so much that we can do to power businesses with technology. You know, I'm better off, you know, working within the technology industry. And he's looking at me like, where do we go from here? And I said, you guys do finance really well, so that's what I want to do. And that's how I ended up trading all my goodwill and getting a CFO job. But I think from a career management standpoint, CIOs have to select wisely, and then they have to stop complaining. From the point of view of CEOs and their senior staff, they have to select wisely, they have to invest personally, and they have to stop complaining.
I like that notion that they have the departments they deserve. You mentioned a couple places your terrific book, 8 Things We Hate About IT, How to Move Beyond the Frustrations to Form a New Partnership with IT. I wonder if you could talk a little bit about, you don't necessarily need to cover all of the 8 things. We'll leave that to our listeners to purchase the book, as they certainly, I would recommend that they do, to read through them all. But can you give us kind of a flavor for some of the things and how you came about the thesis from the book?
Thank you very much, Peter, for letting me, you know, shamelessly promote my book. I wrote the book as a tool for CIOs to give to their business counterparts, because I felt that there wasn't a tool in existence, sort of an easy to read, quick read kind of a tool for CIOs to educate those that are motivated within their executive and leadership team on becoming better partners of IT. So that's the purpose of the book. What I've found and what CIOs have told me is that they've used the book to help educate their leadership team within IT as well, because it gives an outside in view of IT, which a lot of people who've grown up in IT, you know, it's harder for them to develop that perspective. And that's what I try to do with the book, is to try to talk about the opportunities to improve the partnership, because there is frustrations on both sides. And, you know, one of the points I make in the book is that partnership's not 50-50, it's 100-100, with each side doing everything they can do to make the other party successful. And so then I outline the respective responsibilities and what business leaders should expect of IT and vice versa. So hopefully it's been a useful tool. I've received some very nice feedback on it. One of the guiding themes within the book is to connect together the organizations interpersonally, because obviously businesses run through relationships. And then if you've got that as a foundation, then to ensure that you've got strategic alignment, you've got investment discipline, you've got a focus on realizing value, that you're doing things quickly, meaning you're time boxing, using time as an input to projects, and therefore agile or something like that. So you're iterating through to discover the value and discover the function that it will be used. That you're being very disciplined about keep the lights on costs and getting that rationalized through standardization, consolidation, automation. And that you are preparing for the future of IT by tapping into the innovators within the organization and helping empower the innovators within to have a more direct responsibility to manage this asset.
Great points. Can you talk a bit more about the advice? Obviously, again, the title even suggests that it's things we hate about IT. It's sort of the outside-in perspective. And so since that it was with business executives, at least partially in mind, what sort of advice did you offer them in terms of ways in which they need to improve in order to make sure that those frustrations are, in fact, subsiding appropriately?
It's really 3 things. Get to know who's who in the zoo, right? And I actually kind of decompose the organization chart to say get to know your business relationship manager, make sure you know who's in charge of your infrastructure, and identify all the great project managers. And so you want to make sure you get demand through, you know, who can get your projects done, and you want to make sure that you're sweet talking your infrastructure guy so that things stay up and operational. So it's really a kind of a map, if you will, organizational map to start with and to build the relationships. The second thing I do is, you know, assume that IT is part of your job description. This is a asset that fuels your business, right? So, you know, if you're unhappy, okay, fine. If you're medium happy, whatever. If you're IT dumb, IT smart, there is no excuse. You've got to get engaged in this. And then the third thing I do is I just kind of give them tips for how to manage through and work the IT system. So I'm going to do an insider's guide to how do you speak the lingo and get what you need to do and navigate it. Because from the outside in, it can be extremely confusing.
What role does IT have in kind of teaching out the language of IT or the possibilities of leveraging current trends more effectively within the corporation?
Yeah, I don't let IT off the hook. In fact, Harvard Press goes through a peer review, and one of the points of the peer review, the initial manuscript was, boy, I'm really kind of letting IT off the hook because I was so focused on getting IT adopted, if you will, putting it in the job description of the business partners, and I re-edited it so there was a balanced view. This by no means takes away from any responsibility that IT has to become business smart, to stop focusing up and down, but start focusing out to the rest of the organization to make sure that they are extremely disciplined, you know, hire great leaders, source appropriately, you know, I mean, it doesn't take away any of the work that we've been focused on over the past 10 to 15 years. It really builds upon it. So I really do want to emphasize that.
Makes sense. I'm also curious, a trend we're seeing a lot more in our conversations with particularly savvy CIOs is the need to, in fact, learn the language of business, finance. And as somebody who has lived in both of those worlds, do you also see that fundamental need to be able to communicate what it is that IT is doing in the financial terms that are clearest to the organization that they're a part of?
Yeah, and there's really two aspects of that. And I think I kind of underestimated, given the fact that I had a financial background, how useful that was to me. I look at my clients, both from the fact that, say, 70% of the IT spend is lights on. You know, CIOs have to be extremely aggressive in making sure that they expose what drives those costs and doing everything they can do in partnership with vendors and their business counterparts to reduce that on a cost per unit basis. And I have a client now who has survived a very politically tricky review by a very premier consulting company. And it's not an IT specific, but it was an entire kind of cost rationalization of the enterprise. And his organization came through relatively unscathed because of his ability to play chess when it came to rationalizing the cost structure. He had the planes lined up on the runway so that when, you know, this sort of, oh my gosh, we've got to reduce everything by 25%, he's like, you know, he did not have to cut as deeply into the muscle as a lot of his other functional counterparts. And for IT to come through unscathed on that kind of a review, usually IT's fanny is hanging out way up there, is a real credit to him. So that's on the cost side. On the value side is where a lot of CIOs have a lot more work to do. Only about 11% of businesses hold their business leaders accountable for realizing value. And most IT CIOs have not put the mechanisms in place to ensure that not only the business cases include some justification, which they all do, right? But typically they're all thrown away. And many organizations, you know, demand management and getting the prioritization is still relatively political because people can write down anything they want in the business cases and nobody's looking at them afterwards. And that's kind of a shocking statement. You know, when I was a CFO, when we invested in restaurants, we had an extremely disciplined approach to getting people to not only sign up for the individual parts of the capital investment and the P&L, but to also hold people accountable afterwards. So, you know, many people will say, well, wait a minute, not everything can be tied directly to a financial result. That is entirely true. And they really need to take a lesson from the work that Intel did, gosh, I want to say, 10 years ago, on how of creating value dials and tying projects back to, if you will, the operational measures that drive their financial performance, and recognizing that these operational measures like cycle time and speed of service and inventory turns, that kind of stuff, leading indicators to the financial results. So there's a lot more discipline that has to happen. I advise CIOs that if all you're doing is talking about the cost of IT, you will lose. And I'm sure you've seen that within your research as well. You have to put it within the context of value. And, you know, I do see people starting to wake up, not only at the CIOs, but the CEOs and CFOs who are saying, wait a minute, we need to be able to have more traceability between what we're investing in and the business impact.
Very good points. Absolutely. I can't let you go, Susan, without asking you about your thoughts on current IT trends that are particularly exciting to you. As you think forward, what trends have you most excited?
One of my favorite books, besides your book and my book, is the book that came out a year or so ago called Empowered. It's written by a couple of Forrester guys. So you think, oh my gosh, Forrester guys, why would I like that book? Because, you know, all the analyst types, they tell us a bunch of stuff and then we have to figure out what to do with it. But they have done such a nice job of writing a book that to me represents or illustrates and gives us a glimpse about the future of IT within organizations and the future potential of the new technologies. So they, in this book, first half of it talks about the heroes within your organization, given the appropriate support, can run the kind of discovery-based experiments to modify the relationships you have with your customers and, you know, embed technology into your services and into your products. And that's a combination of the stuff we hear about, you know, be it, you know, the mobility, the cloud, web services, collaboration. It's really an amalgam of those capabilities. And, of course, underpinning this are the analytics or the data to make the appropriate decisions. I don't think it's just one thing. I think it's, in fact, it's interesting when you hear experts talk about any of these technologies, they end up talking about the other ones because they kind of lock in together to really create some magic. And the biggest challenge, obviously, is we've got a lot more magic than we have magicians, people who know how to really exploit it. And we're at the point, and this gets into the future of IT, we can no longer expect 5% of the company, those that work in IT, to deliver technology to the other 95%. We have to not deliver technology to the 95%. We have to deliver it through the 95%. We have to take these, as the book calls, heroes, or what I call innovators within, the 25 to 30% of IT smart native innovators. We have to tap into this resource to expand the capacity for innovation and to really enable or empower their capabilities so that we can run these experiments and we can actually see how technology could transform our business.
Great insights. Well, Susan Cram, thank you so much for joining us on the Forum on World Class IT. It's been a great conversation.
Well, thank you, Peter, so much for the opportunity.
You've just listened to a podcast in a series we call Meta Strategies Forum on World Class IT. If you like what you've heard, please consider reading my book, World Class IT, Why Businesses Succeed When IT Triumphs, published by Josie Bass, a division of Wiley Press, in December of 2009. Both the book and the forum on World Class IT offer stories from a wide range of top IT leaders relating to Meta Strategies' five principles of World Class IT. The five principles are as follows. Principle one is people, and it's really the foundational principle. Without the right people doing the right jobs at the right time, it'll be nearly impossible to achieve excellent performance. The second principle is infrastructure. We like to say that this is the principle that separates proactive organizations from reactive ones. If infrastructure is not reliably performing its tasks, the IT organization will become stuck in reactive mode, consistently fighting fires. If systems and hardware and networks and so on work reliably, then a larger portion of the organization can think about the future. The third principle is project and portfolio management. This is the engine through which new capabilities can be brought to bear on behalf of the company. It is important to ensure that projects are delivered on time, on budget, and on target, and that the portfolio collectively supports the objectives of the business. The fourth principle is IT and business partnerships. It's important that, first and foremost, the different parts of IT, from business analysis to development and QA, through to support and all other aspects of IT, communicate effectively and efficiently. It's equally important, then, that IT develop a partnering relationship with the business that it is a part of. If the three prior principles are done well, then IT should earn a place at the strategy-setting table, driving different parts of the business strategy. The fifth and last principle is external partnerships. Outsourcing is becoming a crucial weapon that organizations are employing, and managing these relationships to ensure that value is achieved is critical. In the fourth principle, the organization has learned and contributed to the discussion about what is strategic and what is not. Once that's clear, then it will be easier to determine which aspects of IT might be better managed by external partners or vendors. For more information on these five principles and the sub-principles that are associated with each, please visit our website at www.metastrategy.com, and please share your thoughts and comments by contacting us at feedback@metastrategy.com. Our editors are Chris Davis and Callahan Cool, and our theme music was written by David Arman. I'm Peter High. Thanks for listening.